This is Kevin Harlan, the voice of the NBA on TNT and Monday Night Football on Westwood One Radio. You're listening to Bay Area Sports Wrap.
Welcome to Bay Area Sports Wrap. Alongside Ryan Leong, I am Marco Polomich. And joining us this week here on the podcast is a special guest we've known for a while, and we're so happy that he's finally able to join us on this podcast. Prawn Forrest, sports reporter and anchor, and also the host of the Red and Gold Zone, Kate Rooney. How you doing, Kate? Welcome to Bay Area Sports Wrap, and thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Now, we got a big game coming up tomorrow night in Santa Clara. The San Francisco 49ers are taking on the Green Bay Packers in an NFC divisional showdown. But before we get to that game and preview and what we think is going to happen down there in that rainy weather, which we're getting hit by a nice couple of storms this weekend here in the Bay Area, I want to talk about something that just happened recently, the last day or so, but the ending of an iconic magazine, Sports Illustrated. And, you know, we all grew up with this magazine as the premier sports magazine. Like, you know, if you were an athlete, a great athlete, you know, you made it when you got on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So the fact that this magazine is about to end, you know, it went from a weekly magazine to a bi-weekly magazine in 2018 and then to monthly 2 years later in 2020. So it almost just seems like the writing was on the wall here and that was going to be inevitable. What's your thoughts on this, Kate?
Gosh, you're right. It does seem inevitable. And I admit that even after being a longtime subscriber, I had stopped subscribing to it. Not necessarily because I felt that the quality of the work had changed. I know some people have said that, but because I just, my life changed and the way that I consume sports media has gotten different, like so many other people. It is really sad because you kind of alluded to it. That magazine really helped foster my love for sports. Some of the best pieces of sports journalism I've ever seen came from Sports Illustrated. I've cried reading that magazine because it was so touching and beautiful, the work that they did multiple times. and it is just, for so long, it was the bastion of good sports journalism. And so the fact that it's gone is really leaves a void in the industry, I think. But it is also changing, and what we're doing right now is kind of a marker of that. The fact that the three of us are sitting here in three different places and getting ready to chat about sports. This is the way people are consuming their sports these days. And, you know, it is cool that we get to be a part of that and watch it change and evolve.
Yeah, Kate, great having you on. And I for myself will just say, I didn't read a lot of Sports Illustrated until I got into the business. But the one thing I used to do even when I was a teenager is I'd watch cable TV and they would always have a Sports Illustrated commercial. In fact, I think we're going to link one here on our podcast. These are like a minute, 2 minutes long, but I would watch them all, and I would almost like listen like with immense detail of what was being said and being shown on the screen. And it was just like, I would watch and say, you know what? I'm not that big of an SI fan, but I'd subscribe to this magazine. They'd always offer like a hooded sweatshirt or maybe Michael Jordan highlight video. And of course, they'd always announce that, you know, you get the great Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue as a highlight of your.
And I used to like reading that, too. It was the one of the times a year that women were highlighted in that magazine. They got better about that, of course, as time went on, including women's sports. But also, you kind of mentioned it, the free swag. You used to, when you would renew your subscription, mm-hmm. you got like a cool jacket with your favorite team or a duffel bag or something like that. That was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. And there's another one, too, I put on my Twitter of Dick Butkus at Christmas time in the mid-80s, 1986 specifically. And he's talking about how he's trying to be, he said he calls himself a teddy bear with muscles and he's like Santa Claus. And he's talking about how Sports Illustrated is such a great magazine because it brings out the best in sports fans and people who really appreciate sport. And you could tell even just watching a cheesy commercial like that, that they did put a lot of quality and time and effort into the magazine. And yeah. It's just so sad that it's just disappeared. And granted, some of it is, as you mentioned, technology's changed things, but a lot of it has to do too with the industry is just really watered down products. And I know The Athletic is probably the preeminent publication that we have now, which is an online publication, but it just seems it's kind of unfair because we have, I think, a greater amount of people consuming sports than ever before. For instance, my own mom watches a lot of Warriors games now, and she was never anybody following sports much when I was growing up. She'll always say that she was busy raising us, which she was. But I think the bigger part of it as well is the fact that you have things like ABC on a Wednesday night now televises NBA basketball. And I think Saturday nights, of course, they've been doing that as well. But you find a lot more network programming centered around sports. And I know your station, Prawn, recently became a CW affiliate, and of course they show a lot of sports. So I think that has something to do with it as well. What do you think?
Yeah, you're right. The audience for sports is wider than ever before, and I think The Athletic proves that there is still an appetite for long form printed word, but I guess people would just rather read it on their phones or on their desktop when they have a spare moment at work than they would in a magazine that gets delivered to their house.
I mean, just one more, a quick aside here. So what do you think was going to happen if a magazine like Sports Illustrated has folded? I think the New York Times now uses The Athletic as their sports content. Do you think that a medium will exist for fans to really still get their content? I mean, the three of us are credentialed journalists, but there are a lot of people out there that are not. Many podcasts that are popular, whether it's on YouTube or some other streaming platform, just have people giving their own opinions, and they really don't have the background that we have.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are consuming their sports content on Instagram, X, and TikTok. And you can tell that people do still want to follow those credentialed journalists because our colleagues who cover the 49ers and the Warriors have a ton of followers and people who really engage with that content on a regular basis, even if they're posting frequently. So I do think that there is always going to be a need for what we do, but it's just going to be presented to the audience in a really different way, it seems like.
Yeah, and you touched on it earlier too, Kate, that with the way people are consuming their news and their sports now, everything is on their phone, right? So we're seeing the death of these traditional mediums like magazines, newspapers, radio. Everything's becoming all syndicated as far as that goes, and now it seems like everyone does have a podcast, and that's where everyone's getting their news now. And it seems really surreal to me because even 10 years ago it really wasn't like that, and now with the way technology and the internet have advanced with the smartphones and everything, it just seems like now we're really entering in a new age of the way we receive and process our news and sports information.
We'll say there's always going to be something for holding it in your hands. I was just talking to JB Long. He is the voice of the Rams. He's their radio voice. And he's got a little son who's in elementary school. And he told me that his son, who is a diehard Rams fan, naturally, every day asks for the NFC West standings to be printed out. So this little kid still likes to hold it in his hand, analyze it by looking at it on a piece of paper. So I wouldn't be surprised if in 15 or 20 years we see newspapers and magazines come back around.
Oh, let's hope so. We'll see. But again, the way it's running, I'm not going to hold my breath. Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's segue over to the big game that's going to happen tomorrow at Levi's Stadium, which you two will be at. I unfortunately will not be, but that is the circumstances. But again, we're looking at the San Francisco 49ers now, the number one seed in the NFC. They have the bye week. They were able to get their guys rested up, healed up, and to go against the Green Bay Packers, who just went into AT&T Stadium last weekend and just destroyed the Cowboys and made them look like they didn't deserve to be in the playoffs. And this team just caught fire, really, toward the end of the season. They had to win their last game to get into the playoffs. And now it seems like with Jordan Love now creating chemistry with his receivers and Aaron Jones in the run game, this team's going to be difficult to beat for the 49ers tomorrow.
They are. And I don't think they're getting enough credit, as a matter of fact. People have forgotten that it is so. I guess if you look at the percentages, yes, often the teams that have the bye advance to the NFC Championship and beyond. But so many Super Bowl teams have been the team that had the hot hand. I mean, I'm thinking about like the Giants in the early aughts, the Tom Brady Patriots. Those were teams that no one expected to make it all the way. And yet those teams were the hottest teams entering the postseason, and therefore they ended up winning it all. So I think the Packers were going to give the 49ers a much bigger fight than anyone expects. That being said, they do have some key injuries. They are not rested. And I think that I am going to go ahead and trust Kyle Shanahan's game plan and Steve Wilks' ability to adjust the scheme as needed. They've 49ers have Pro Bowlers on every level and all pros on every level. And while I think the Packers will give them a really tough game, and I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if there were an upset, I do still kind of think it's the 49ers game to lose here.
I was going to say, I think the one big variable for the 49ers they've got to worry about is Mother Nature. Because the 49ers, to me, are a team that is based out here on the West Coast. Now, Marco and I are actually pretty big Raider fans. And we used to be, of course, I can say for both of us, we used to be much bigger Raider fans when they still played here in Oakland. But the one of the things about the Raiders is they would always struggle a lot of times in environments that didn't have ideal weather. And the Niners are going to face that tomorrow. They're going to face maybe not rain on during the game, but they're going to have a rainy field to deal with. I know that maybe they finally have gotten the turf issue settled at Levi's, but for years they could never get grass that took to, you know, held held its ground well. And I'm just wondering from your standpoint if you think weather might be a factor.
It definitely could be a factor, but there's no Kyle Shanahan team that isn't super run heavy. And with a healthy Christian McCaffrey, I think they're just going to feed him as much as humanly possible. Elijah Mitchell is also healthy. Jordan Mason is also healthy. Elijah Mitchell has totally proven himself. He hasn't been available a ton this season. And when we have seen JP Mason out there, he's looked like he could be a really good second option back. So to have him as the third option is a pretty big deal. I think they're just going to try to establish the run early. Even on a non-rainy day, Shanahan has said that he likes to have 40 plus carries in the game. So I think that that's the route that they're going to go. They'll probably try to mix it up with some passing plays when they can. But if there's any team that is able to run it, it's the 49ers. And I might add, they have dealt with adverse weather conditions before and done just fine. You could point back to that snowy game at Lambeau where they beat the Packers. I think that was the 21-22 season en route to the NFC Championship. That was an ugly game, and it surely didn't look like they were going to beat the Packers until time was expiring there. But they've done it before. They can do it again, but it could be a really messy, sloppy game out there. And when that happens, it does tend to your point, even the playing field a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, tell me if you could for a minute what it's like covering the team. I mean, I'm there with you on game days, but again, I don't get a chance to cover practice like you do. If you could tell me a little bit about your story. I saw on your Instagram you got some video of Trent Williams, and he actually had the little like theater barricade set up in front of his locker. Even in Barry Bonds' heyday, when he was having all these journalists surrounding his locker, including myself, I never saw that before. I'm sure Barry Bonds, if you put him in a time machine, he'd probably want one of those and put it in front of his own locker.
I'm sure he would. Well, you know, though, Trent Williams isn't he's not like some guy who's trying to shut out the media. He's a really nice guy, really approachable, really easy to talk to. He's always great with us, and I think you guys probably have recognized that even from being there on game days. I think it's more about establishing his presence in the locker room to the rest of his teammates. In fact, I made a comment like, "What are you doing here with these stanchions, Trent? I don't want your teammates to get any ideas." And he goes, "Oh, there can only be one house." He calls it his house. So he's got two lockers there. He did have three lockers for a while, but they ended up allocating that locker to a practice squad player who they recently elevated. And so he's got two full lockers, both of which have his name on, one of which says Williams. Every locker has the person's last name. The other one says Silverback, which is his nickname. So the 49ers are completely on board with this. And I think it kind of just speaks to his presence as the most respected, most veteran player in that room. He's the one out of all the 49ers who have been in the league the longest and 11 straight Pro Bowls. He's just done things no one has ever done. At that position, he's incredible. And he's earned the right to, have a rope for us to stand behind if he wants, I think. I don't mind too much. In a way, it's a little more organized. Not as bad as like everyone else trying to crowd around for those scrums afterwards and barely, elbowing people out of the way and stuff. We all, have our spot right behind the stanchion there. So I didn't mind it so much.
And then if you could, the other players you interview, from my standpoint, I've noticed that maybe a team takes on the personality of its quarterback. And I've noticed that there's a difference in the Niners locker room this year than in years past. I think when Jimmy Garoppolo was there, it took on a little bit more stress. It seemed a little bit more tense in the locker room, maybe because of the kind of attention he drew. But I find that Brock Purdy, he's such a mellow person that I sort of sense that vibe in the locker room now. And I see that even with the PR staff. I mean, yeah, of course, you have your. You have, you know, there's etiquette that you have to follow and whatnot, but I find that it's a very, you know what I mean? It seems like it's a pretty good atmosphere there for everybody, not just the players, but for media as well.
That's funny. I had not thought about it that way, but I do think you're right. The players, when Jimmy Garoppolo's there, were just constantly having to defend him. Yep, Jimmy's our guy. We believe in him. He may have thrown two head-scratching picks today, but he's still our guy. And Trey's our guy too. He's great. We know that he'd be ready if he ever gets the call. It was a really tenuous quarterback
Right.
situation there for a good four seasons. And now, no questions about who their quarterback is. They've had to defend Brock in a certain way against, I think, the national media who doesn't respect him as much. But really, there aren't any 49ers reporters who cover the team regularly who still have doubts about Brock Purdy's abilities. And so, yeah, I hadn't thought of this, but I think you're right. That does take like a certain edge off, and it has been pretty good vibes in the locker room all season.
Yeah, I think it. So, you've been now with Kron for 5 years. Have you covered the Niners pretty much for each of those 5 years that you've been there?
Yeah, that's pretty much my primary responsibility is to host our weekly 49ers show, Red and Gold Zone, that goes out not just to the Bay Area, but to several markets around California and even in Honolulu. There's a pretty big 49ers fan base there. So we get aired at our sister station in Honolulu. And when it's in season, I'm pretty much all 49ers. Maybe I'll go to a Warriors game if there's an off night. Maybe I'll go to a Giants or A's game when they're in season, when they overlap there. But for the most part, all 49ers, and I'll take some time off when the season is over. And then, kind of dig into Warriors and baseball spring training a little bit more.
Yeah,
Awesome.
they're different sports for sure. This is the last thing I'll mention here, and I'll give it back to Marco. This Niners team reminds me a lot of the Warriors in the early part of their championship run. It seems like this team really has things figured out now, and they just seem like they've become a very likable team. I could see in the years past, you could always say, I'm not a Niners fan because of this or that. And I think the Warriors also garner more attention locally because they're the only Bay Area basketball team, and maybe the Niners have taken on that mantle now too, because since the Raiders have moved on to Vegas. How do you feel about the way this Niners team is structured this year?
Well, I think that they've kind of taken a page out of the Warriors book in a sense that they have put so much thought into bringing guys who are going to fit with their culture and who are guys that they can be proud of off the field. Now, I know Draymond Green has had his issues, but he's never had any off the court issues like when it comes to issues outside of the arena. I know some people think he's an aggressive player, a dirty player, and you'd be crazy not to say that what he's done this season is a little bit out of control. So I think it was the right move to have him get some help. But even Draymond is like a good guy, for the most part. And the 49ers, that's really important to them. They have gone out of their way to find high character guys. And that contributes to a solid locker room and to an ability to focus just on the game and not have to focus on anything else going on. You know that you're the guy who's at the locker next to you is going to be doing his assignments just as much as you, that everybody's putting the work in, that everyone's bought in, and that gives the players a kind of confidence so they can really trust each other.
Awesome. Okay, you're usually the one who's always asking the questions to people, but I actually want to talk about you right now. And before you got to Kron 4, you were with the Pac-12 Network for a number of years. So can you just take us through your sports journalism history and what got you interested in wanting to be in the sports journalism field and working as a reporter?
Well, no one has the same story, and mine is no exception. I always wanted to be a journalist from a very young age. I mean, if you go back and look at my old like diaries from elementary school, I say that I want to be a broadcaster or a sideline reporter. I didn't necessarily know that I wanted to do sports specifically. That kind of came later. Didn't end up majoring in journalism though. I decided to major in something else and eventually kind of realized, you know what? I think that was my career calling. I'm going to go back to school. So I went to USC, got my master's in broadcast journalism. And at that point, I knew that I only wanted to do sports. And part of that was from my constant consumption of Sports Illustrated, watching ESPN, watching games all the time. I knew that I didn't want to, yes, of course, we have to cover serious stories in sports sometimes, but I wanted it to be fun and about entertainment and not have to deal with the life and death stuff that so many of our colleagues who are on the hard news side do. So that's what drew me to sports. I've always loved the sense of community that sports creates, and I just wanted to be a part of that in a bigger way and help share those stories with other people who are kind of like-minded. And then I just got super lucky that the Pac-12 Network was launching right as I was graduating from grad school, and it factored positively into your resume and application if you were an alum of a Pac-12 school. And so I think too, being from San Francisco originally, I hadn't really planned to move back there, but it made sense kind of as a homecoming to be near my family again. And so I started there as a production assistant, but always knowing that I wanted to continue doing some on-air stuff. And luckily, things just worked out that I was eventually able to audition for an on-air role there and start working for them in that capacity too, and do a bunch of freelance stuff with some other networks and outlets on the side as well. And when I realized I wanted something more stable, that's when I was lucky enough to get the job with Cron 4. Freelancing is awesome, but as you guys know, it's not for the faint of heart.
Right, for sure. And knowing that you've established yourself here in the San Francisco Bay Area as one of the sports reporters that people know you, they see your reports, they see the Red and Gold Zone. What would advice would you give to young girls and young women who are up and coming and wanting to follow you, your path into getting into sports journalism? What advice would you offer them?
I think there's so many pieces of advice I have. We definitely don't have time for all that, but two things are: one, a question I get asked a lot is whether it would be a good idea to like maybe take a job in news that's not related to sports and try to get your foot in the door that way. I do not think that is good. I would say take whatever job you can in the sports side. I know a lot of people in this industry who started as production assistants, who started as web writers, things like that. And we're able to work their way up because they were in sports. I think once you pigeonhole yourself into news, it's way harder to break back into sports. And the other thing is, this business is, I learned this from my friend Ashley Adamson at Pac-12 Network. This is her line, but I'm stealing it. This is a relationship business. It's all about relationships. Almost every job I've ever gotten was not just because I sent in an application and was the best out of that pool of applicants. It was because I had some connection or had someone who could put in a good word for me. And the most important part is establishing those connections without the intention of using them as connections, is establishing genuine connections. And then you know that when the time comes, you can call on those people later, but not establishing those connections in the hopes that they're going to be able to do something for you down the road. That's, not really genuine, and that's not how it works. I guess it just really comes down to be nice to everyone, and people will want to put in a good word for you one day when the time comes.
Very cool. That's really great advice from you, Kate. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'll get an aside here, Kate. It's interesting you mentioned that, but now that I think about it, you're probably right. When it comes to, you can find people who actually can transition from sports into news, but news into sports is a little bit tougher. In fact, one person who just went from sports into news, my good friend Dave Lewis, who's done
Yeah, mine
years,
too.
he did KCBS radio. Then he was doing Santa Clara basketball. He was doing some St. Mary's. He was doing the Bay Area Panthers. And now, I don't know if you knew this or not, he's now the morning news anchor for the ABC affiliate in Reno. So
Did know
there you
that
go.
big life change for him, but yeah, they were willing to take a chance on him, even though he's primarily done sports his entire career, aside from I think being a radio DJ like in the 70s and 80s a little bit. But yeah, I mean the problem is sports is so competitive that if you don't have that on your resume when you're applying for the next level of job, you're really not even going to get a hard look. My supervisor at work told me that every time we have an opening for a sports related opening, he gets hundreds of applicants within the first 24 hours. If they have a news related opening, the applicants trickle in over the course of a week and they might not even get up to 50 or 100.
Wow,
It's
interesting.
an unbelievably competitive business. That's not news to you guys, I know, but it's just so many people want to do it that if you haven't stuck with it and if that's not what you've had on your resume, I think it's going to be an even bigger hurdle for you to overcome to try to get your foot in that door later.
No, you're definitely right. I've talked to some other people. I don't want to mention on our podcast, but it's very hard to find your way into the business now. I mean, in some ways, you could say that it's easier because there are more avenues now, but I think in some ways it's harder. I really do. I talked to my dear friend Ken Gimlin, may rest in peace. He passed away about 10 years ago, but back in his day when he was covering sports, all you had was radio, TV, and print. And even when I started, that was all you had was radio, TV, and print. You had cable, but now, as you mentioned, with social media out there, your own blogs, I mean, there is definitely much more options for you, but even then it's still difficult. So, you almost have
Well,
to figure
because
out a
the
way to.
market's like oversaturated, like you said, there's so many different podcasts, so many different blogs. Anyone can start posting videos on YouTube, TikTok, and it's kind of just a matter of luck which ones of those are gonna take off. Either that or like finding your niche. I'm a theater person. There's an old song from the musical Gypsy, you gotta get a gimmick. And I think that applies in sports too. If you have a gimmick, if you have a niche, if you have something that sets you apart, that helps you get noticed. Like, just for an example, I know she's kind of controversial because she had some tweets that resurfaced that people didn't like, but Annie Agar, who I think she did some stuff with like Bally Sports and maybe NFL Network. I I might have that wrong, but she kind of got picked up and started making a name for herself in the industry because she made funny videos where she pretended to be owners from all these different NFL teams at a meeting and was just like making jokes, and she would dress up as different owners from all the different NFL teams, and people really caught on to that, and that like kind of helped her get noticed. Such a random, silly thing, but it was so unique. So you have to, find something that sets you apart because everyone can write a game recap. Anyone can, go on here and say intelligent things about teams. But a really good thing for people who are looking to break in is try to find something a little different. Way easier said than done, obviously. But, it seems to be that that's who's getting noticed these days.
Yeah,
Yeah, all of them,
maybe build a
sorry.
collection of have a collection of starter jackets like I do. I don't
Hey,
know.
that's what everyone knows you for, right?
Yeah, that's true. I'll take pride in that one. But let me ask you back to your red and zone, red and gold zone. Tell me what it's like to interview Kristen Juszczyk. I mean, she's gotten a lot of press lately for these very special, one of a kind jackets that she makes, and she's got a lot of talent. And you had a chance to sit down with her at her house.
Yeah, I've always been really interested in the lives of NFL families behind the scenes because I think it's such a unique and oftentimes stressful situation. You're kind of playing second fiddle at some at many points to the person's career. There's a lot of careers where that's true, but professional football is certainly one of them, and the families just are so supportive and a huge part of what makes these players able to be successful. So I've been following Kristen Juszczyk for years, pretty much since I started covering the 49ers, because she had a really active social media presence. And I like fashion too. And so her thing was always kind of creating these game day looks. Pretty much as long as I've been covering the team, she's been doing that. And so I've been wanting to talk to her for years. And it just didn't really work out until recently. I was having a hard time getting a hold of her. I tried DMing her and stuff. Finally, I just asked Kyle, her husband, "Hey, can you connect us?" And he said, "Yeah, sure. I think she would love to do that." So, she invited me and my photographer Rudy Garcia to come over to her house and kind of get a behind the scenes look at her sewing space. And she is just a lovely person, really talented. I mean, she kind of tried to downplay it, like, "Oh, anyone can learn to sew. Anyone can, get these patterns that I use." I don't think so. It's not just that. Her attention to detail and her execution is so flawless, and her creativity. I mean, she's doing things that no one's ever thought of before that seems so obvious now. Like, how have we made it this long without jersey puffer jackets in our lives, right?
Oh,
Everyone's going to be
absolutely. That
wanting to buy those.
right.
But it just took someone like her who was creative and had the inspiration. So it was such an honor to be able to tell her story, especially just good timing right before Taylor Swift wore one of her jackets and she kind of blew up. So worked out well for us because, our story got a lot of eyeballs on it because people were so curious about her.
I'm kind of wondering if she's going to be able to find a way to market it where she actually sells her product, because the two people that have done so, Alyssa Milano for the longest time had something called Touch was her brand. And I
Yeah,
guess
I
now
remember that.
Erin Andrews has the market. But Erin Andrews and Alyssa Milano are basically selling the same thing, which is female inspired or designed clothing. They're not doing
Yeah.
what Kristen Juszczyk's doing.
Right. I think what Kristen is doing is something totally different. And for such a long time, there's kind of been a dearth of options for women when it comes to sportswear. We either just have to wear stuff that's cut for men or stuff that I don't know how much of a hand Erin Andrews or Alyssa Milano had in their lines, but to me, it seemed more like they were kind of loaning their face to someone else's designs, their face and their name.
Sure.
Those weren't necessarily things that I would ever want to wear, even as a female sports fan. So I think Kristen's is really different in that way, and I do know that her hope is to mass market them in some way, and I think she's trying to figure out the best way to do that. To date, she's not profited off any of that at all. I got a lot of comments on my social media saying, "Oh, she's copyright infringement." Nope, not at all. She paid for all the products she bought, and she just repurposed them, and there's no laws against that.
Right. No, I wish her well. I think I talked to her in the elevator briefly at the last Niner game, and I just told her how, and this was at the time, I think was Debo was wearing her most recent creation.
Yeah, that was cool too.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I couldn't be happier for her, because like you said, we've never had anybody who's taken jerseys and repurposed them into puffer jackets. And me being a fan of starters, and like, of course, for me, it's the satins, but the parkas are really popular. The breakaway jackets, which were the pullover windbreakers, those were really popular. But nobody's ever done what she's done. And you're right. How could we have gone this long? Because sports branded products have been around now really since the early 80s. So we're talking 40 years. And in 40 years of mass produced items for fans, this is the first time something like this has happened.
When I interviewed her, she said she just got tired of seeing people wearing, like at Lambeau, for instance, wearing like a regular just puffer jacket and then having to put a jersey on top of it. First of all, it looks uncomfortable. Second of all, it's not made for that. Third of all, you're probably still kind of cold. So she's meeting a need in the market, I think, that hasn't existed before.
Gotcha. Well, okay, before we let you go, and because we're almost out of time here, I need to get a 49ers Packers prediction for tomorrow night's game. Who do you got?
I think I am going to pick the 49ers, but like I said at the beginning, I think it's going to be a really close game. I think it would be, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's within a score, especially because, as you said, the rain, that is a great equalizer. Mother Nature has no favorites. So, I'm going to go with the 49ers by a slimmer margin than I think more people are expecting.
You have a score.
Awesome.
I'm so bad at this. I've never once gotten a score, even in the realm of possibility, but I was thinking about this. So I think I'll go with 31-28, San Francisco.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm seriously, I was about to say 31-28 49ers. It's going to be a definitely one score or one position game. And whoever has the ball, I think last is going to win this game. So, man,
See that?
it
Yep.
was right out of my mouth.
All right, we'll see. I'll go 27-21 Niners. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay.
And one thing I want to point out before we end our time, Kate, is how much pride do you take in being a native San Franciscan and reporting on the local teams? I mean, for me, I think it's one of the biggest things I'm most grateful for is that I grew up watching these teams. My dad took me to Giants games primarily, the occasional Warriors and Niners game. And for me to be able to be one of the few journalists like yourself who grew up here and get to cover the team, it's really, really special.
It is special. To be honest, I never really wanted that to happen because I still love watching sports as a fan. And I totally grew up going to 49er games. Not so much when I was a little kid, we would watch on TV, but when I became old enough, I started buying my own tickets and going with my friends I would go to at least one game a season. But I just thought, this is kind of a gross expression, but you don't necessarily want to see how the sausage gets made, right? You like a team. You don't want to see the behind the scenes stuff that might turn you off a little bit. So I'm definitely not a fan of the team anymore, not because of that, but just because it changes. You can't root for the team in the same way. I like covering good teams, so I hope for success for all of the teams that I cover because it's more fun, it's better for them, everyone's in a good mood. But I'm not losing any sleep if the 49ers don't win a game. So it's changed in that way, and that's tough. But that being said, there is something really, really special about being in your home market, which is a great market, a great sports market. I don't think San Francisco and the Bay Area get enough credit for just how great of a sports market it is. And knowing that, you're bringing the stories to people who in many cases, and you can relate to those particular fan bases in a certain way, I think that people who might have moved here to cover the team, they might be excellent journalists, but they might not be able to relate in that same way.
Well, there she is, the great Kate Rooney. Check out her coverage throughout the week on Cron 4 when she is a sports reporter, also does the anchoring, and of course the host of the Red and Gold Zone show. Thanks, Kate, again for joining us on here on Barry Sports Talk. It was a pleasure having you.
It's a lot of fun talking to you both. I really appreciate you.
All right,
see you later, Kate.
Ryan Leon, I'm Murphy Kolovich. Thanks for tuning in to Barry Sports Wrap. Catch you on the flip side.